Okay, so we've seen this Gemara several times throughout the year. We saw it yesterday again. We saw it at the beginning of the year, if you remember, when we did Tameh Mitzvah of Shemitah, but we only saw the last line of it, which was the point of Shemitah is to know that the land is God. But when you see the whole Gemara in context, as we saw yesterday, it is very, very weird. Because again, to remind ourselves why it is weird, you have the following very odd conversation. A heretic comes to Rabbi Avahu, and he says, your God is a joker, because he tells Yechezkel to lie on his left side, and then he tells him to lie on his right side. Apparently, this is for comic effect. He's a joker. And then a student comes in the middle of this conversation, and says, why do we keep Shemitah? And Rabbi Avohu says, aha, I have an answer. Amina l'chumilta d'shavya l'chavaych. I have a reason that explains, that will answer both of you. And what is it? That Amar HaGadosh Baruch Yisrael Zaru Sheish Veshmitu Sheva Kedesha Teidu Sha'aret Sheli. Work for 6 years and the seventh rest to know the land is God. V'hein Lavasu Kain, and they didn't do it. Elachatu V'galu Min Hago Shel Olam they sinned. A king either kills the whole city if they rebel against him, or only half of them, and he's really nice. He only tortures the leaders symbolically, and therefore something, right? And you look at his story and you're like, okay, the one line I sort of understand here is Shemitah is meant to show that the land belongs to God. That we've talked about over and over. But what does this story have to do with anything? What does it have to do with the Min's Yechezkel business? Why does the one answer somehow solve both of them? Right? What is going on? Right? Everyone tries to understand. So we did one yesterday, which was that both of them were struggling with the problem of passivity. How can that be spiritually meaningful? And we talked, and Zohrai Price suggested that the point here is that intentional passivity is actually meaningful. Right? And that somehow responds to both of them. But let me suggest a few others, some of which will explain the Gemara, and only shed limited light on Shemitah, and some are really that cut to the core of Shemitah. So, let's see how many we can do. okay, let's do a few. Okay, so some Mefarshim really limit their they really limit their how broad what's going on here is, and they read this in a very, very a very, very narrow way. So you find this in the Marsha, I think. You find this a little bit in the Petachinayim. But I'll read it to you. The Marsha says, "Yesh ledaktik my kamar luhu lechavi lechavayu." What happened here? How does this answer both of them? Demashev shulamin v'hagot sholam b'met ala davar b'shmita. He seems to give two separate answers, right? Right. That's sort of the fundamental problem here. Is that he says I'm going to give one answer, and then he gives two answers, which A is not what he said he was going to do, and B does not seem to show the connection between Shemitah and Yechezkel, which it seems to be critical to understanding his lesson. So he says, Venira, so therefore he, so the Marsha tries to limit the problem. He says, Venira di ikar shilat apikores, di ikidichiv laseit eravon beit Yisrael beit Yudah, ma haya inyan mispar hayamim asher tikshkav alav shlosh meot vitishim yom. Nasat avon beit Yisrael, nasat avon beit Yehuda arba'im yom. His fundamental problem wasn't with the symbolic punishment or the vicarious punishment, maybe. It was with the number of days. Yechezkel was specifically told to lie for 390 days on one side and 40 on the other. And the min said, this is just arbitrary. I mean, what is he doing? And he says, well, let me explain it. Because, as we've talked about, what is the punishment for not keeping Shemitah?
Exile
from the land. And in fact, at the end of Yirmiyahu, it says, that is what's going on. And therefore, if the Jews are supposed to be punished for not keeping Shemitah, and the punishment is Galut, and Yechezkel is somehow being punished for them, then how many Shemitah did they not keep? So 390. And what was the 40? Was for Beit Yehuda, right? Because there was the 390 that the Jews in total didn't keep. And then the Jews, meaning Yisrael, went into Galut. Yehuda did not go into Galut. So another 40, right? So together, and then he goes through the whole math of how exactly you get to this. That is right. So he's being tortured, right, to cleanse the sins of the Jewish people. And so fundamentally, according to the Maharsha, the answer is: you want to know why this many days. You want to know what the reason of Shemitah is. My answer to both of you is: the reason of Shemitah is to show the land is God. Because the land is God's, the punishment for not recognizing the land is God's is Galut. Yechezkel, in addition to whatever punishment the Jews, he is minimizing the punishment by taking some of it on himself. And this 390 and 40 maps on to the failure of keeping Shemitah in both the period in which the Jewish people are all in the land and in the period when only Yehuda is in the land. And therefore, the theology of Shemitah is simply the land is God's, and therefore if you don't recognize the land is God, the punishment is Galut. But most of the dialogue that was happening here was about technicalities, right? Was the fundamental Shemitah question is that, and then the whole min thing is very technical, which is, okay, let's work out the exact years and figure it out. Okay, now you get different versions that go in this direction as well, but they try to be, but some of them are more fundamental than others. So I'll give you three more, okay? So Rav Yaakov Loiberbaum, the Nesivos, in his Sefer Nachlat Yaakov, also addresses this Agadita, and he says, I don't understand what's going on, right? What does this whole mushal have to do? How is it connected? And again, like the Maharsha, he says that his fundamental problem was about the symbolic punishment, right? But he puts it a little bit differently, because he says they didn't not keep 430 Shemitah. They didn't keep Shemitah for
430
years, right?
430 years worth of Shemitah sacks.
No, just 430 years, of which is obviously significantly less cycles, right? So he says the problem is, and this is a bit more fundamental, and he says, what's the problem? His problem is as follows. I understand that... Okay, it's not fair to put him in the same camp as the Maharsha. Okay? He gives a fundamentally different answer. He says the question goes like this. I understand that the land belongs to God. I understand that that's what Shemitah is trying to show. I understand that therefore the punishment is Galut. What I don't understand is why are you being punished for the 6 years in which you're allowed to work and not just for the Shemitah? Which, in fact, how many years are they kicked out of the land?
70.
Right? So he's saying, listen, in the end of the day, they're only kicked out for the Shemitah they didn't keep. So why is Yechezkel's punishment, right, symbolic punishment, for all the years, including the years in which they were allowed to work? And what's his answer?
Well, the answer is that the land is, that it's a lesson about the land being a possession of God.
Well, no, it's about it being a God, but... Exactly, right? He says, don't you understand, it's not just the Shemitah. Shemitah, we integrate into the way we relate to land, just like you have land, where you have crop rotation, right? Where you plant for a year, you don't plant for a year. You plant for 3 years, you don't plant for a year. However you do crop rotation, right? And you leave it fallow. Spiritually, we have a cycle, which is 6 and 1. And if you fail to keep Shemitah, then you're failing to integrate into the entire system. And what he's really telling him is, right, the men asked, why are they being punished for the years when they were allowed to work? And the student comes in and said, what is the reason for Shemitah? And he said, let me explain it to you. It's not what you're thinking, that only Shemitah is about recognizing God. The key to understanding the Agadata is work 6 and rest in the 7th and know that I'm God. It's if you integrate Shemitah into your natural planting, then the entire system, right, your entire agricultural system is predicated on acknowledging God. And if it's not, then there's something lacking in everything. And therefore, even if I'm only going to actually send you out for 70 years, at some level, the punishment you deserve is for the entire system, because all of it is about recognizing God. So that is Rav Yaakov Leuberbaum. The Chida in his Rosh David gives another symbolic answer, but this cuts to Shemitah. For him, it's really all about Shemitah, and all the other stories are background. Well, I don't know if that's fair. There are two different things going on here. The way he understands it is like this. The Min says, listen, I don't understand what's going on. The entire assumption that you should be punished to get kapara assumes that you are children of God, and therefore, even when being sent in galut and being punished, you still have a relationship to God at all. But you're not, right? You're God's slaves. And when a slave is sold to a new master, they don't owe the original master anything. And therefore, the Min comes to him and he says, why is God punishing Yechezkel? The Jews are just a slave and they've been sold down the river. So now that was it, right? The punishment was you ceased the relationship. Isn't that over, right? And then the student comes in and he says, doesn't he essentially have a point, right? Because what are we called throughout these prakim? That you are an eved, right? Right? The land is mine, you're my slaves, right? Isn't that the relationship that you have? So doesn't he have a good point, right? That you're not exactly, but maybe we're not even avadim, maybe we're zarim, God is relating to us as strangers, right? Doesn't the whole idea that the land is mine, I own it, I own you, that highlight at some level this idea that, but once I kick you out, you're not in the land, you're not in, right, you're not my slaves, you're not anything. And Rabbi Avohu says, no, you are, Shemitah, really the Jews are my children, and therefore they can be punished and be in galut without losing their relationship with God. Right? The point of Shemitah is not that we are slaves, but is to simply remind us that the land is God's. Right? Not that we are slaves, but the land is God's. We are children who are forced to acknowledge God's ownership. Right? And that's what he's right telling him. He's saying, don't think the fact that I'm taking you out of the land is my way of saying the land is mine and I have no relationship with you. Right? Because you didn't treat it properly. No. I want you to recognize that it's mine. I have a relationship with you and my children. I'm sending you in Galut to remind you that the land is mine. Right? And therefore, his answer that Shemitah is just teaching you that the land is mine, but not by breaking Shemitah and sending you in Galut, I am ceasing the relationship with you. It's just about acknowledging it is the answer both to the theology of Shemitah and why the answer to the Min's question, which was fundamentally why does God bother punishing, right? Hasn't he ended the relationship with his slaves by sending them Galut? Answer, no, your children, which must recognize that your father owns the land and therefore he can punish you if you fail to recognize it, but you still have a relationship with him. And I'll give you the one more. I gave this more last year. But this is Rabbi Price's other drasha, not the one we saw yesterday. Right? We did one yesterday. But he has a very... in the other one, he has a very nice pshat. And he, B'Kitzur, says like this. He thinks that the Min and the student are presenting two different worldviews. The Min came and said, the Min basically believed in a completely physical world with no spirituality. From the vantage point of a physical world, he only believed in the value of doing, of planting, whatever. And therefore he comes and says, how could your God tell Yechezkel to lie down and do nothing? That's crazy. That would imply that there is value to something beyond this world where you're supposed to be up and working, and right, the fact that he can tell him to be passive to symbolically represent some spiritual thing, that is crazy, right? Because all that exists is physicality, and therefore all that exists is working and building, and telling him to be passive is just ridiculous. The student says, why do we have Shemitah? Now, in this drasha, Rabbi Price says, what does that mean? He says, listen, his question isn't why do we have Shemitah. It's why do we not always have Shemitah, right? This is a ascetic. He's saying, why work, right? Right? Why work? I don't have a problem with the seventh year. I have a problem with the other six, right? And Rabbi Yavahu says, I have one answer for both of you. Yes, exactly. Is no. The lesson of Shemitah is that the goal of the world is to synthesize the physical and the spiritual. And therefore, it's not right to say you always have to be working and can never rest. And it's not right to say you should always rest and learn and think about God. The answer is work for 6 years, rest in the seventh, so that you recognize that the land is God's. Right? Build a system which synthesizes the physical and the spiritual so that even the physical is done from the vantage point of the land is God's. That's the goal. That actually, I think, is a very nice read of the Haggadah. Because what it's saying is, literally, right, there are two views, right, and Shemitah is the answer to both extremes, and it is saying, no, the real lesson is the synthesis of work and rest for God, and therefore when you work, you'll be doing it from the vantage point of God, and that is the perspective. Okay, so those are three more perspectives on this Haggadah, a little bit about Shemitah,